interrupting the current neo-Euclideo, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricket Tube Busting episode BTWRLM 623. Remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed, because you don't know what you missed until you make the switch and get you behind the woodshed. And that does the reality, because you can't go wrong when you get behind the woodshed. It's just a fact. And touching on a bit from last episode, from Trump's executive order, duping the devout about voter ID, which will be digitized real ID. Which, remember, you won't be able to fly without that little device at all here with all that right to travel that you have here after May, they're telling us. And as I exampled the Aadhaar system in India, Trump referenced in that order, we're going globalism, folks. Transport Canada scrambled to manage fallout after WEF backed the digital ID program as journalists probed privacy concerns. Government records newly obtained through access to information requests reveal a deep unease within the Transport Canada when Global News journalist David Atkin began inquiring into the World Economic Forum-backed known Traveler Digital Identity Initiative. Internal communication shows officials labeling Atkin's biometrics-related questions problematic, indicating a scramble behind the scenes to control the narrative around the controversial digital ID pilot. And just add that real ID point was to have your face on a card digitally, so they start there. And they just start expanding out and absorbing whatever they decide they need. Well, you know, for those United States interests, national security. Anyway, we can all keep buying into it or not. Here we have coming globally. It's all happening still. Nothing ever stopped here on this side of this problem of the equation. The program touted as a touchless solution for future air travel. Remember the Kobe swindle? That's where they pushed that through. Before that, it was really not just the Kobe swindle. They were saying, oh, you won't have to do anything. You'll have a piece of rice-sized identity electronics in your hand, and you just put it up near the sensor. You don't have to touch. So this has been an ongoing propaganda as they've been moving this along, and then they make it mandatory. The solution was designed to create a comprehensive digital profile of travelers, Rebel reports, promoted under the guise of convenience and security. The project raises serious privacy concerns, particularly given the opaque collaboration between the Canadian officials and the World Economic Forum, WEF. Remember that word collaboration. So it's going to be there. They make it sound like it's happening outside, which in this case it is, but collaboration happens internally to your domestic government systems. A private entity with far-reaching influence over the global policy is the World Economic Forum, which we heard last episode was really stepped by and beyond and through and thwarted by the BlackRock, which is moving quicker, much quicker. And it was the WEF has been the showpiece while the BlackRocks of the world moved underneath the skin of it all. Documents show the former Transport Minister Omar Alhabra's office was actively coordinating participation in WEF events with Transport Canada's direct and international relations, Jennifer Sully, viewing these global forums as a prime opportunity to amplify the KDDI's visibility. In one instance, she encouraged the minister to engage in the WEF Stewards of Mobility event at the OECD-linked International Transport Forum Summit, an elite policy gathering with close WEF ties. Sully also floated the idea of transferring former Minister Mark Garneau's seat on the WEF Board of Stewards to Alhambra, underscoring the government's commitment to maintaining alignment with WEF agendas. 3 years after Rebel News filed its initial access to information request on January 2022, the documents finally surfaced, heavily redacted, yet still revealing. Communications from Executive Director John Velho suggested that the COVID-19 crisis was seen as a timely justification to accelerate digital credential adoption under the pretext of modernizing travel. Highlight these words, accentuate them a bit so you understand. Again, it's over and over. These things are still here moving on. This is internal to your governmental systems already. It's not out there. However, the extent of the redactions, especially around media responses, leaves a troubling lack of transparency about what officials are so eager to hide. While KTDI was folded into government messaging about economic recovery and public health, it bears all the hallmarks of long-game digital identity framework, with private global organizations like the WEF steering much of the dialogue. The implications of privacy and civil liberties are stark. Let me just add also multinational corporations. These are not that far removed for any NGO other than what we hear in the news, working behind the scenes feverishly like a termite, eating out your house and your home. What's being quietly ushered in is a taxpayer expense. Is that, again, consistent with what I've told you? They let you pay for it. And you usually will. That's the interesting part about how this works. This taxpayer expense is not a benign travel convenience, but the architecture of a pervasive surveillance regime. And so we hear those again. Here you are, CRIT Canada. We go into real ID here. For sure you can't travel in the United States. ADHAR was telling us, they were telling us that that was bringing it in. They're bringing all biometrics into that one. And Trump just referenced that for your voter ID. Nobody looks behind the scenes what these statuses are they're creating in you, and whether or not they're any good, and then we could look, after once we do that, then we can look at whether that right to travel is supposed to be interfered with by their commercial interferences under color of the need of security. Again, it takes away your presumption of innocence as well, what the PATRIOT Act did. And hot on the ID debacle, shoving into the digital gulag here, whether or not they can, U.S. Social Security Administration website crashes following DOGE upgrades, DOGE upgrades. The United States Social Security Administrator's website has crashed repeatedly in recent weeks after the SSA installed a fraud check upgrade mandated by Elon Musk's cost-cutting agency, the Washington Post reported on Monday, citing current and former administration officials with knowledge of the matter. Or the problem appears to stem from an expanded fraud check system introduced by the Department of Governmental Efficiency, or DOGE. Remember now, this is the Digital Services Department that's got the name change. Keep track of this as well as they move this along. And this DOGE was supposed to be just advisory. But here they're already working and meddling. They understand what they're doing here, who they're doing it to, and what they're trying to do. And in a way, I just let you know, there's an old language that they use called COBOL, COBOL. It's an old programming language, and all the systems we're running on, it's just ancient. And they're trying to upgrade it, but it's not quite so easy to move that over into so-called new stuff like JavaScript. So this is what's kind of going on. But this is just an implementation of a fraud check on top of it, and it already started causing trouble. It said that adding the administrator's technology team had not tested the system to see if it could handle the rush caused by the large flow of visitors. Crashes appear to be caused by the expansion of the contract between the Trump administration and the credit reporting agency that tracks names, addresses, and other personal information to verify users' identities, the newspaper reported. The expanded checks are now being conducted earlier in the relationship to the large number of consumers, leading to an increased load on servers. Consumers? A Social Security verification through third-party consumer credit company? Is that the Social Security, what that's been about all this time? Consumerism and third-party interference? Did you know that? I told you this was coming along. I told you third-party interference would be terrible for us. But here it is, telling you exactly what this is all about. So why doesn't the federal government use all the things it imposes since 9/11 on here to get an ID? Why doesn't the federal government obtain verification at the government repositories of the original unchanging source of information than a third party? Why isn't the real ID enough? Remember, they're just implementing this. Why aren't they going there? Why are they going to this third party? Wouldn't these official documents be the next more current place than the originals with this real ID, if you have to get it, or the originals themselves as the identification documents? Wouldn't that be where the government should go to itself, essentially? Wouldn't it be better just to go to the original documents where the Social Security number is sometimes given, but which is not supposed to be used for getting a driver's license? Wouldn't they go back to the original documents at the counties where those are filed too, or search them out? They're supposed to be all online. Why are we going to a third party on top of it? How is the private credit company information verified for accuracy as well, with all the fraud we hear going on? How is it known to be connected to a particular beneficiary as well? And who fixes an error while this beneficiary waits for their benefits when it gives you the big red light, says no? And what office are you going to go to as DOGE starts cutting employees and cutting offices? Why is a private credit record a verification relative to Social Security anyway? It was not supposed to be having any use in identity to it. If commercial credit systems are connected to a private government account, and Social Security numbers are already required for doing anything relative to government, national or economic security, then how far away are we from China's sesame social discredit system with Trump and Steen's help? Is that also why the Social Security number functions as a tax ID number for purposes of governmental extortion, those civil rights? You can read it. 42 U.S.C. 1981. Keep bringing this stuff up. I hope people pick it up and read it. I hope you're flabbergasted as I was when I read it all. You start looking at all this stuff and kind of rewires how you think this place is working. Why is a federal Social Security number required relevant to the exclusive jurisdiction, state, hunting, fishing, or other recreational licenses? You notice in the states they've attached that, or at least most of them. Is that why the clause that the Social Security number are not to be used for the purpose of identity was removed, and that number is now a personal or consumer identification? It sounds as if we're just an efficiency expert away from being connected up to let you deal with the commercial beast of burden webpage wardens of the digital gulag to me. If the verification becomes what I'm abused with now to sign into AI ex-Twitter, woe be unto us, right, Muskrat? So many questions, so little time. While DOGE claims to try to make things more efficient, science is striving for efficiency using biological computers, likely to the same end, beyond efficiency, but connectivity. The computer that runs on human neurons. Pretty cool stuff, as always, but watch where it goes. Watch what they're going to consider. Watch what you can apply to, and I'll do a suggestion at the end of this. The CLI biological computer, manufactured by Australian company Cortical Labs, is designed for biomedical research, but also promises to deliver a more fast-paced and energy-efficient computing system. Modern life is shaped by people's interactions with objects that are powered by computer chips. This millimetric chips, composed of silicon semiconductors, are found in cell phones, microwaves, credit cards, and transit passes. Real ID, folks. See how you're already integrated. Your ID, your consumer ID, your to-the-grave care. It's already connected up here. The demanding use of energy and water for silicone manufacturing, in addition to growing demand for increased speed and performance, has led researchers to race to find alternatives. Thus, in recent years, transistors and semiconductors made from carbon nanotubes and graphene have emerged. But the riskiest proposal was presented this March, one that involves human neurons. Lab-grown brain cells are the basis for the functioning of the CL1, which has been announced at the first commercially sold biological computer. This machine promises to unravel information processing in the brain. Unravel information processing in the brain. The CL1 has been designed for the purpose of drug development by studying how neurons react to certain compounds, It will also help scientists and medical laboratories understand how neurons process information and how real-time learning works. The computer will also offer insight into the mechanisms of trigger some neurodegenerative and cognitive diseases. Well, we think that since we're experiencing a push for computers to have artificial intelligence, then there really must be an interest in understanding how intelligence arises, which is biological in origin. Because the only generalized intelligence we know of is that of a human or animal, says Feng Wen Chung in a video call with El Pais. He's the founder of the director of Cortical Labs, the Australian company that's behind the new device, half organic and half machine. Currently, there are research centers that develop neurons outside of the living organism, usually from stem cells. The purposes are usually biomedical or neuroscientific research. However, Cortical Labs has gone a step further by placing these cells in a system where they receive information from a program, a piece of hardware. Pausing just a little bit, I hope your thoughts are kind of orienting to things I've talked about in the past, and in particular that little dragonfly, and in particular to what the programming is on the jab, and that's all going to be pulled together here in a moment. But these things, just as a thought, as a suggestion, as a potential. When the neurons are cultured, they typically don't receive data. They're simply arranged in a dish, emitting and collecting their own electrical activity. But that's not what actually happens naturally inside a living being. So we created a system that allows us to build simulations that neurons can process. To keep this hybrid organism alive, the CL1 has an internal structure that regulates the flow of gases, pumps, and temperature. The cells are fed a nutrient-rich solution that reaches them through filtration units. Well, we try to mimic what the body does, keep them well nourished, eliminate waste, and keep them at the right temperature. It shouldn't be too hot or too cold, or right around 37 degrees Celsius, which is 98 degrees Fahrenheit, which is body temperature. We also have to maintain the correct pH level, so it's neither too acidic nor too alkaline. It's estimated that a graphics processor unit used in conventional data centers with the purpose of supporting cutting-edge AI workloads can consume more than 3.7 million watts per year. In contrast, the CL1 uses only 850 and 1,000 watts. The neuron is self-programmable, infinitely flexible, and the result of 4 billion years of evolution. When you think about that 1,000 watts, that's what marijuana takes to grow, doesn't it? It's a lot of power. Anyway, we're going to do it real efficiently, I guess. The neuron is self-programmable, infinitely flexible, and the result of 4 billion years of evolution. So remember, I talked about the COVID jab having identity markers and that the hybrid DNA cells created from the mRNA were patented property, and that upon one's death, the company owns that property. And remember the dragonfly that was prepared internally to accept an electrical package to command its movements to fly. So what happens after your death and the company steps in to reclaim its property, and this CL1 unit is attached to reanimate the cells to function as a biological computer. But actually, don't they just need to start with your head? And a doctor that has been working on identifying a counter for the effects of the Technos swamp jab, hopefully maybe to counter these preparatory steps for you to be hooked up in the future to an electronic controller. Dr. Sabin Hazan, a physician and researcher, discovered that ivermectin, a fermented product of the bacteria Streptomyces, unexpectedly increased bifidobacterial levels in the gut within 24 hours. This finding surprised her and was, as one might assume, on an anti-parasitic drug, since it would normally wipe out bacteria, not boost beneficial strains. Notably, Streptomyces belongs to the same phylum of bifidobacteria, hinting at the possible connection. During the pandemic, while conducting an FDA-monitored placebo-controlled trial with hydroxychloroquine, Z-Pak, vitamin C, D, and zinc, Dr. Hazan faced a crisis when a patient with chronic renal failure, diabetes, and severe comorbidities crashed, the oxygen levels dropping to 60s and 70s. Blinded to the trial, she shifted the patient to an open-label treatment prescribing 36 milligrams of ivermectin, doxycycline, and zinc. She instructed him to take it with a fatty food, French fries, en route to the hospital, a bold move inspired by encouragement from Dr. Tom Barodi, a pioneer in fecal transplants. This is where it got kind of weird. But anyway, we want to go to the ivermectin side. The input side. Remarkably, upon arrival, the patient's oxygen saturation had risen to 97%. Dr. Hazan documented this in real time, sharing updates on X Twitter, including photos of the patient's oximeter readings, ruling out claims of fluke. She credits ivermectin's enhanced absorption with fat and detail support supported by early Merck studies but overlooked in later trials, like the one that Dr. Boulware at the University of Minnesota, which administered it on an empty stomach. So this is the point about looking at the studies, are they what we're doing and not, or not, and they can corrupt a study by not doing something or knowing to do something, then the outcome of that could be detrimental to it, a proper understanding. Just an interjection, I've been looking at the fats here recently, quite a few years now, and finding out they're really remarkable substances, the good fats generally, but it's why we hear a lot about fish oil and olive oil and things like that. But the point being that there's fat-soluble things. Now understand, too, the jab was a nanolipid, remember? So this has another interesting capacity all by itself with the lipid construction here and the utility. Dr. Hazan tested ivermectin on herself, confirming the bifidobacteria boost, though she notes it doesn't sustain long-term without repeated doses. And practice with the unknown long-term effects has not been, is not understood quite yet. Her sister, Dr. Liddy Hazan, had previously brought ivermectin to market for scabies and lice, proving its safety even in babies when patented. Yet as a cheap generic, it faced resistance for COVID use. Dr. Hazan published an abstract at ACG linking ivermectin to microbiome benefits, but its controversy and lack of profit potential have hindered broader acceptance. She calls for more research into this drug's potential. So I offer this to you. It came through a Twitter post. You can go read that as I read it. I thought it was fascinating. This ivermectin is very interesting that it has synergistic effects with other compounds and lipids. That was even more important and impressive. And so I also tracked down a link to Dr. Sabin Hazan. Dr. Sabin Hazan has been a gastroenterologist for over 30 years and is an expert in gut microbiome. She is CEO of ProgenaBiome. She has conducted over 200 clinical trials for pharmaceutical companies, including vaccine studies. Her research genetic sequence laboratory has spearheaded studies on the gut biome, cataloging all that can be found in BIO. The microbiome has been shown to form part of our immune system, which concurs with the work Dr. Shiva presented in the National Science Foundation in 2019. When she started studying the microbiomes of COVID-19 patients, she quickly noticed a pattern. Then she was shocked at the unprecedented barricades to conducting research trials and trying to get that work published when the information didn't align with the public health vaccine-only narrative. Her story and COVID-19 revelations need to be heard far and wide, and I heard this, and I do think that her work needs to be shown. I don't know anything about her, what her work is about. You'll have to qualify all that yourself, but what she's coming up with is consistent with other things I've found. I hope some of you have been doing the research and hear that as well. To go ahead and spread this word once you find that it's something to do. I just took the instance of the synergistic effect of fats, fat, oils, lipids, to be another indicator for me, whether or not I want to pursue the microbiome bloom, a short-term bloom or not. I guess we could use that too. But it ends up building up and showing, as I've been saying here for years, we got a system that we're dealing with and we need to feed that system. And we're looking for things that feed a system, not looking at just the symptoms of it, and certainly affect the cause. And the main culprit terrorizing the world is returning here this week. The next pandemic can strike tomorrow, says the WHO, the WHO, no, not the rock grout, the owl, or the little people from Whoville, but the World Health Organization. Coming here to shake our timbers, I guess. Governments must invest in a response to global contagion, the World Health Organization has suggested. I just want to stop reading right there. This guy is, again, a terrorist. That no country stops this, I don't know. But here we go. So that we understand and we can listen, and I don't want to dismiss, it's not going to be a global contagion, folks. It's going to be a contagion local to you. That's how simple this is. So, this is not anything more than that, and I don't want to dismiss anything that's serious. But we found out most of it isn't, and there's ways to counter whatever there was going on. So, these again, pumping the fear button, as I told you, and anybody who studies this will know this is the method that works apparently over and over. Hopefully, not so much anymore. But looking at Trump, I don't know. People are really filled with hopium, aren't they? In a statement on Monday, the WHO Director General, Tedros Ghebreyesus, urged governments to invest in health security and finalize the pandemic agreement, an international treaty on pandemic prevention and response. As I've told you before, I won't go through it any much more than just to say, there is no such thing as a pandemic in a country, in a county. They don't exist. It's a private made-up term. They've changed it a couple times to try and make it fit. Just stick with your local communicable disease law, and you'll likely see that you're not looking at pandemics. You're looking at somebody demonstrating, non-fraudulently demonstrating the infectious agent that's causing first an initial outbreak that expands into the state for you, if you're in the United States, to what they call an epidemic. That's where it ends. Any jurisdiction, that's it, right there. And that's what they're supposed to be taking care of. A new similar contagion could happen in 20 years or more, or it could happen tomorrow, but it will happen, and either way, we must be ready, he says, describing it as an epidemiological certainty rather than a theoretical risk. But what was the certainty, folks? That they would broker from Harma a jab that was a bioweapon. That isn't even a risk. That's a certainty, isn't it? So the contagion in the great COVID swindle called pandemic was the governments of the world, and Tedros in particular, themselves, since the pandemic is his made-up term. So any similar contagion will be governments and Tedros using bioweapons as a matter of law. Again, for the United States, it's real simple. We got a law about it, defines it. You go to Title 50, it's in an odd place for most people to go find it. It has to be in the War Department. Oh, the Defense Department, excuse me. And you'll see right there, it needs to have an exception. It needs to have a dual use. Well, you heard that come up all the time. And when you got to the communicable disease law, and this is how you have to go through the steps, the communicable disease law didn't allow for the demonstration of the infectious agent, first of all, or therefore then anything could work on that infectious agent to allow a dual use for the thing they called the vaccine, which was the jab, the bioweapon. So that's how you do the analysis. For America, I found that pretty simple and straightforward. I know there's a little couple jumps, but this is how we're able to independently identify it, where everyone's saying the governments and Tedros weren't acknowledging that. So I wonder if Trump will have him arrested then for this terrorism that he's causing, or would that expose Trump to a similar charge for initiating the great COVID swindle that many reports and studies say killed and maimed millions, killing also entire economies as we are now barely suffering through or being able to get through. Oh, well, Trump, we got tariffs now. It's all going to fix it, right? The effects of which allow for the continuing economic warfare today toward the future that they want. And as we also hear a different type of terrorism, New Zealand Food safety considers pushing up max glyphosate residue levels. New Zealand food safety, I just can't read these words really anymore, folks. I just have to interject all the time, but I'll just do this one and try not to interject too much. Remember, food safety, food security. All this is, I told you back in 2010, when the United States put in their modernization acts for all these things, housing security, food security, whatever security, this is what they were talking about. This is the kind of things they were going to do. This is what we saw that coming through for the COVID swindle. That's what they always talk about, but it ends up being essentially killing you off. They don't really do the studies. The way the rules are set up don't allow for a proper assessment at all. And it's interesting to me that the corporations on a profit motive are given the license to declare whether or not their stuff's any good. But you try to do that and you're going to be presumed guilty, correct? And so this whole thing is topsy-turvy. Until people start figuring that out, we're going to have some of these troubles. But the New Zealand Food Safety is proposing to increase maximum residue levels of glyphosate in some grains and peas. In an ongoing consultation, the proposal is to increase the maximum residue level, MRL, from the current default of 1/10 milligram per kilogram to 10 milligrams per kilogram in wheat, barley, and oats, and 6 milligrams per kilogram in dry field peas. New Zealand Food Safety Deputy Director General Vincent Arbuckle, I always keep tripping over this word general. All generals, war is against us. Director General Vincent Arbuckle said the current MRL for glyphosate is 1/10 per milligram per kilogram is based on information presented at the time the product was first registered by the company to get the registration. The default value was considered sufficient to manage expected residues, and the specific MRL was not required. The levels detected, get that one, we found out there could be these problems with these tests, or what they're looking at, or when they look at it. The levels of that are detected in the survey were higher than the default MRL of 0.1 milligrams per kilogram, but many times lower than what could be considered a food safety risk, Arbuckle said. Again, it's how much, what's the risk about how much they can feed you before it starts showing up? Do you want that kind of food safety? The assessment of food safety dietary exposure indicated no concerns with these residues or with international trade. This meant there is sufficient information to propose MRLs of 10 milligram per kilogram in wheat, barley, and oats, and 6 milligram per kilogram in dry peas. Arbuckle said this approach taken by NZFS is consistent with that taken of New Zealand's main overseas trading partners and international bodies, such as Codex. The Codex Alimentarius is a collection of international food standards practice published by the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization. Quote, if there is a food safety concern with residues in a food crop, then the use would not be approved. But they issued the great COVID swindle jab, didn't they? And this is all coming down as Bayer and Monsanto goes to the United States Supreme Court to limit or eliminate glyphosate lawsuits for cancers and various other harms, of which Monsanto just lost another jury verdict in the billions of dollars. It's coming through now. And as I was talking about the concerns of due process in last episode, we're getting more reports coming through, the cases that are coming through from the people that were being deported. And so I want to watch that. To me, I don't know if I mentioned it or if you're picking that up. It's not that I'm saying anybody should stay or go. I'm saying that they should be offered, they are entitled to due process, lawful due process. There's no hesitation in that at all. What comes out of that, that's not what I'm talking about. That's up to the people that have the rights to do, to protect themselves in the law, to get what they deserve, and I hope so. And I say that almost biting my tongue with the injustice in the system, and we do have another statement out of the Louisiana court, which was predicted. And when you can predict But what a judge is going to do, that's not a good sign for independence, is it? The other thing we talked about last episode. The Supreme Court lifts temporary block on Trump's use of Alien Enemies Act to deport immigrants, clears path for further challenges. And this is where we're going. I'm doing is trying to expose how we're going to make sure we watch for us that our rights aren't just incrementally taken and how we have to jealously protect them by being observant. And as I said, Trump didn't care about due process. He doesn't care about it at all, it seems to me. And has nothing to do with any of the art of the deal, certainly not part of the art of the steal. And yet we hear it right there in the title, what I've been saying needed to happen. So far, the court picked it up. The Supreme Court had to understand that. They didn't get it below. And that's the other problem that we're watching. So when I'm talking about this again, as I mentioned last week, I may be talking about it, maybe even sounding like I'm agreeing with it. I may not be, absolutely. And a lot of times I'm not, except I'm looking at principles and discussing those. And I think they're important to remember. I don't see a lot of reflection in people with them or a lot of statements about them. So that's what causes me to want to speak to them. That's why we start talking about this. Otherwise, at some point, why are we even talking about any of this? It's just one big corruption, right? But we live here right now, and we have to figure out how to, as I say, avoid it. Don't be standing on the tracks when the train's bearing down. Don't be there on the tracks when the train's on time to run you down. The court rules that people targeted for removal under the act are entitled to challenge their deportation. Okay, so those of you listening behind the woodshed, you heard me say that, and I was saying that they disregarded that, and those people that everyone wants to throw out because, oh, they're foreigners, is a direct attack against you. They start incrementally eating away at this. For those people, you have none as well. And we've already seen that, but most people don't recognize it in the 911 PATRIOT Act, where your presumption of innocence was taken. You're now a terrorist that hasn't been caught, and you're just going to be presumed to be a misdemeanor. And that's why all this ID came down, because now we got to keep track of you. People don't recognize all this, what they've done with all that. That was another jump into this problem. So due process, I told you a long time ago, is probably the last right we have. It's the last time to get records made publicly and open because, if you will, an embarrassment on the government it needs to back off for you that you set it up. If you don't know about it, you're just going to be run down. If you're not given a chance, you're going to get run down like all the people that got shipped over to El Salvador, a foreign prison system. In its decision, the Supreme Court agreed to lift the TRO, but explained that the only question on which its decision turned in which lower court could hear the challenge, because the current case was brought in the District of Columbia instead of the District of Confinement, the court found, on venue grounds, that the TRO should be dissolved. And venue is one of the jurisdictional arguments you put forward. However, and this is where the thing is, they can argue, oh, this court didn't have jurisdiction by venue. And this is what the court found. However, you can't just use that to push people out that have a right. The court took pains to underline that detainees subject to removal orders under the AEA are entitled to notice and an opportunity to challenge their removal. What have I said? Essentially, due process is notice of the violation and an opportunity to respond. And there's two more steps, a time to respond and a place to respond, the venue. Okay, that's due process in a nutshell. Notice of a problem and an opportunity to respond to it. And a place and a time, clearly. So, they're entitled. These folks that ran across the border, enticed as they were, as propagandized as they were, as helped as they were, however we might think about it, they get across the border, and they're entitled to notice opportunity to challenge their removal. That, quote, notice must be afforded within a reasonable time and in such a manner as will allow them to actually seek. I pause. What do you think it's going to be, folks? Those of you who listen to me, you know the words. So don't hesitate to use this thing. So they have time to actually seek a habeas relief, and that they are, quote, entitled to judicial review as the questions of interpretation and constitutionality of the act. I feel vindicated if there was any challenge against me right here. This is perpetually my message of what we're being denied already, but this is coming out, and it's easy to vilify people that are not from here, the foreigners, but in fact they're mirrors. I keep telling you, they're mirrors of what's happening to we the people. And essentially, I have no problem extending to anybody anywhere a lawful opportunity to have a hearing in defense of whatever they thought they wanted to get done or needed done. In this case, some people need to ask for asylum. No different than the guy from Maryland was shipped down. I think it was Maryland. Shipped down, granted asylum, now he's in El Salvador prison. Why? Why? That's a crime. Anyway, now the government's pussyfooting around about getting him back. Why? Anyway, we'll go on here. This is as I've been saying here, folks. The critical point, quote, the critical point of this ruling is that the Supreme Court said individuals must be given due process to challenge their removal under the Enemy Aliens Act, as stated by someone who was a witness to all this. I think it was the ACLU attorney. Exactly what I've been saying. And habeas relief is available, as well as judicial review, even if they're a foreigner. And Trump didn't care about your due process rights. Cannot mean that he intends to really make America great again, from what I can see. And one of the briefs from the ACLU stated, quote, it is becoming increasingly clear that many, perhaps most, of the men sent to El Salvador on March 15th were erroneously listed as gang members, largely because of their tattoos. The TRO, quote, is thus essentially to ensure that more individuals who have no affiliation with gangs will not be sent to a notorious foreign prison. And I got to thinking about that, and you live in a place where you better look like the gang member, so you throw some tats on, you think you're doing okay, then you say, well, I can get out of here, so you get out of this place, and you come up to some place like this, and because you got a tat, you're going to be condemned and vilified. I can see that problem. Not that I agree with it, not that I believe it fully, but there it is. And then, well, who am I? Who is any of us to deny anyone the ability to say, no, I had to put that on because my family was going to be killed. I didn't believe in it at all. Thank you very much for receiving me. Can I have asylum? I mean, you have an ability to do something there. That's the law allows. Why not? Again, this is not a place that the United States of America was not a place to shut the door. It needed to have an orderly door open. That was what that was about. The huddled masses thing. How many people in this country came in through the normal legal route? A lot of work. That should be offered to all kinds of people. I don't really care who they are. And they do need to have an assimilation. They do need to be shown what we do here. We are a different place, though I don't like to get too patriotic sounding, because we're not enjoying it either. And it's these kind of cases that prove that out. You might say, what does that have to do with me? But it starts here. What happens to you when you're deemed, like, let's say we were in hearing, a sovereign citizen? What about an anti-Semite because of an ex-Twitter post? What's the underlying prosecution? Your statements are contrary to the United States interests. That's what they come with. Where do I get that? The government just proposed that in the Mahmoud Khalil abduction I reported on as the first evidence of existential threat to us all. It's taken them 25 years to get what they wanted through 9/11 to us. Is right there with Khalil. And I understand that the judge in Louisiana just ruled against him, and he's not supposed to be in Louisiana. And that was predictable, and I'm telling you that's the evidence of an injustice in this American system. Again, talking about, oh, we got to have due process, we got to go to, it's not saying I want to go to the courts. They're corrupt. You talk to me about all the time. I don't know what else to do, but if that's the last grip you have on going to some place that has gangs that's going to kill you, then I think someone should have the opportunity to at least say that much and have it respectfully listened and earnestly decided correctly. Honestly decided, I guess, is better. From a series of ex-Twitter posts, Jeff Hoffenhart's posts, we got a copy of the government's evidence against Mahmoud Khalil, a two-page memo by Secretary Rubio containing no allegations of criminal conduct, but arguing Khalil should be expelled for beliefs that undermine core American interests, in quotes, core American interests. Now, I don't know about any core American interest the government of the United States is speaking to. It would be United States interest, as I've been pointing out, is the actual interest. But then Glenn Greenwald responds with, after a deportation, judge ordered the United States government to turn over all evidence against Mahmoud Khalil. The State Department explicitly admitted that his actions in the United States are legal, but nonetheless want to deport him because his views on Israel reflect anti-Semitism and are thus a danger. To which I replied, protecting the presumption of innocence, freedom of speech, and of association aren't core American interests? So do you see the danger here, folks? The government, Trump's Make America Great Again administration, is saying, if it runs contrary to a United States interest, you can be removed to a foreign prison. But that can't make America great again. The memo I was reading provides all the trigger phrases, but doesn't produce a stated interest to which an evidence said to be available in another document is supported. They certainly don't talk about the First Amendment right that Mr. Khalil has, like all of us do. And they certainly, as I have found, they do not understand what a Semite is, to understand that they're anti-Semite. And they do not and will not make a distinction that maybe Mr. Khalil was talking about anti-genocide. They wasn't speaking about Israel or Jews at all. And I've also told you about the other hang-up about this. When I read my Bible, it says none of us can determine a Jew. God does that. So who are these people? Who are these people that claim to know what a Jew is and anti that is, and then as a some an insult? He's actually telling you who they are. So I suppose if we say America enough, we're good. If you look at that document, America this and America that, I guess that proves it. Khalil was bad. And so from this case, we hear from the Trump administration, it's not America first, it's Israel firster, or MICA, make Israel great again. Even though no one seems to know what that anti-Semitism more than the Zionists fraudulently promote. And when you start untangling this thing, you start to see this lie, and the Trump administration is willing to keep pushing it. It's completely unlawful. And the judges are there to receive that nonsense. And one day it comes to bite you because of the precedent that they set. If y'all didn't notice the immense societal and private irreparable harms caused in the absolute failure of due process Trump initiated without any remorse with his great Kobe swindle, just as I was warned in last episode about the dangers of Trump not honoring his oath of office regarding due process, we'll get innocent people hurt, and irreparably so, not indefinitely. We have an update that Chief SCOTUS Justice pauses order in return for Maryland man. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts agreed Monday to pause a midnight deadline for the Trump administration to return a Maryland man mistakenly deported to a notorious prison in El Salvador. The Justice Department argued an emergency appeal to the justices that the United States District Judge Paula Zenas overstepped her authority when she ordered Kilmar Abrego Garcia returned to the United States. The administration has conceded that Abrego Garcia should not have been sent to El Salvador because an immigration judge found he likely would face persecution by local gangs. But he is no longer in U.S. custody, and the government has no way to get him back, the administration argued. You getting this, folks? You don't think it's you? I'm asking you to consider it might be, as they start lowering the bar on what they can collect up that's counter to a core United States interest. Zenas gave the administration until just before midnight Tuesday to facilitate and effectuate Abrego Garcia's return, Quote, the district court's injunction, which requires Albrego Garcia's release from the custody of a foreign sovereign and return to the United States by midnight on Monday, is patently unlawful, Solicitor General John D. Sauer wrote in the court papers. The federal appeals court in Richmond, Virginia, denied the administration's request for a stay. Quote, there is no question that the government screwed up here, Judge J. Harvey Wilkinson wrote in a brief opinion accompanying the unanimous denial. The lawyer who admitted the government here made that mistake in this case has been suspended on top of what the government did wrong in exposing the wrong. If you think you'll get the truth out of Trump. Zenas wrote that the decision to arrest him and send him to El Salvador appears to be wholly lawless, explaining that little to no evidence supports a vague, uncorroborated allegation that Albrego Garcia was once an MS-13 member. Let's talk back again, as I said, the memo talking about Mr. Khalil was vague. It used phraseology that was just reprinting the statute without any actual statement of a thing that was done that could be considered in violation of a U.S. interest. They used a vague term, and they misdefined the term anti-Semitism. They didn't say it was against Israel either. And so here, in this case, they're pointing out the same things I was pointing out in other cases. And this is how the government starts to mess with your rights. And they're doing it now. I'm not even touching on that. Some of you getting involved, you already said, well, they're doing that now. Exactly. This is what I'm saying. This is another thing I'm saying. I'm showing you the evidence that's happening. We can't trust any of this. I don't know where the people are, but we can't. We think it's coming. Oh, I agree with these judges. Well, these judges are pointing it out. Like I said, 15 judges from ICJ. They could have no jurisdiction at all, but if there are 15 people are looking at the international law and they come up with the same thing that I did before I said they said their point and opinion, we all came up to the same thing. I can pretty well say that I understand what's going on and I have a pretty good perspective on it, and I think it reflects the law, what should be done pretty clearly. That's what's going on here. Whether I agree with these judges, think they have power, whatever that is. In fact, this court, Zeta's court, is being said that she doesn't have any power. That's what the government's argument was. But because the guy wasn't here no more. He'd been swooped out of the country, as I told you, extrajudicial removals. We'd heard about those way back in 2010. Albrego Garcia, a 29-year-old Salvadoran national who has never been charged or convicted of any crime, was detained by immigration agents and deported last month. He had a permit from DHS to legally work in the United States and was a sheet metal apprentice pursuing a journeyman's license, his attorney said. His wife is a United States citizen. In a statement, his union, an International Association of Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers, or SMART, said it is fighting to ensure he receives the treatment he is granted under law. Well, they're a little bit after the fact, aren't they? That the Trump administration doesn't believe that anybody actually should be granted any good treatment under the law. It's whatever Trump says. And this is the danger of what we've been facing for quite a bit. And I also talked about, I felt a little bit, maybe that people, although I never got anybody saying it, I felt I was a little bit strong on the suggestion we were very close to a nuclear winter. And you heard me say that quite a few times. And I'm still concerned. I think it toned down a little bit, but Trump is taking a left turn somehow, and this is coming right back up. But I'm going to show you now, we're getting an admission from the Russian side, how close we were. How close did we come to nuclear war with Russia? How concerned was I about that glowing postulated cricketism? This is from one of the nuclear capable participants. Trump team stopped World War III from happening. That's from a Russian envoy. Because the United States began to have diplomatic relations again, proved a decisive moment to avert what was appearing unavoidable under the auto pen of Biden. Just talking, as I told you, we cannot lose the diplomacy part, even if it doesn't go anywhere. is so critical to understand. And to his credit, but he has no other, he's got no cards to play, remember. To his credit, the last thing he could do was to start talking with him again. And where I thought the people had the sense God gave a box of rocks regarding the aversion to nuclear war, the United States should not stand on ceremony with allies. It is even useful to bomb them with nuclear bombs. And this was stated by a TV channel by Fox News journalist Jesse Waters. Quote, friendliness to other countries is what has plunged us into a lot of problems. Actually, we are not school children. We don't need friends. Any country should put its interests first. And when our interests coincide with the interests of others, we can do business. And when not, well, that's life. If we have to burn a few bridges in relation to Denmark in order to capture Greenland, so what? We're big guys. We dropped atomic bombs in Japan, and now we have no more loyal ally in the Pacific. We may have to burn bridges and build a new bridge, but big and beautiful for the next generations of the United States. America is free from the shackles of history. Trump knows what we need to do, Waters also said. So let's hope Trump knows what he needs to do and he isn't the Zio puppet he is appearing to become with this mentality in our news cycle going on. I could not believe I'm hearing this. This is leading the nation in that commentary. I've heard hardly any, if any, pushback on that statement. I haven't heard the guy lost his job or anything. No, we're big people. We can drop a nuke. Just push the cherry red button. Who cares? Nuclear winner. We're big boys. We can handle it. Big girls. We can handle it. Does not make America great again. And yet this is the news that people are being fed. And this next news just sounds more like the tales of an economic hitman as we can move through what's going on and watching what we've been told in the past working out in the future much easier anymore. Zelensky blew up minerals deal, U.S. Treasury Secretary said. Ukrainian leader is not getting the best advice from his team, Scott Bessent has said. Ukrainian Vladimir Zelensky sank what should have been an easy deal when he had a public altercation with United States President Donald Trump in the Oval Office. United States Secretary Scott Bessent said in an interview with the journalist Tucker Carlson published on Friday. And Tucker Carlson's getting interesting to me about, and I'm not the only one. I've seen a couple of people say it. I didn't really think about it too much. It just looks like he's more of a setup, like you might think he would be because of where he's at and what he does now and the popularity. He's still going, but there's some things that are now coming together that are becoming much more troublesome for me on what is being produced and what we're being told. And this is part of that as well. My reading this and seeing, as I said, it looks like this guy Bessent, the discussion he's having is like coming from the tales of an economic hitman. In April 2019, the former actor and comedian Zelensky ran for president of Ukraine, promising to end the conflict in Donbas. He defeated incumbent Poroshenko, and Zelensky's presidential term expired last May. In his last acting role prior to running for the nation's highest office, he portrayed Ukraine's head of state in the comedy series Servant of the People. When asked what drove Zelensky to take such a high-handed tone with Trump during their public spat in February, Bessent described Zelensky as a performer, kind of a vaudevillian. The world's a stage, folks. You've been hearing me say this about kabuki nonsense going on, and now he's showing us that. He's telling us exactly what happened there. Trump was playing his part. J.D. Vance played his part. They're all playing their part. Quote, he was an ordinary person thrown into a fraught time, took on a role that he got stuck in, the secretary said, adding that Zelensky's advisors are not perfect and that he's not getting the best advice, suggesting that, well, Trump is, if you can believe that. The Ukrainian leader's dispute with the American president led to the signing of the U.S.-Ukraine minerals deal being called off, Bessent confirmed. Trump later accused Zelensky of trying to force a long-term aid commitment from Washington in order to keep fighting. Subsequently, after a short temporary freeze on the U.S. military aid and intelligence sharing, the Ukrainian agreed to an unconditional ceasefire, which he hasn't met, not one day. not one time yet has he met that ceasefire relative to Russia's energy system. And Russia's honoring their commitment. And about time's about ready to come up to lift, and everyone's really concerned what the payback's going to be. Following the U.S. brokered talks, Saudi Arabia, Russia, and Ukraine separately agreed to halt attacks on each other's energy infrastructure for 30 days. Hasn't happened. Moscow has not attacked, and there's not been any reports that they have. According to Moscow, Ukraine has flagrantly and repeatedly violated the partial ceasefire. We have five more today. Kiev is ramping up attacks on energy-related sites, despite Zelensky's promise to the United States, the Russian Defense Ministry stressed in a press statement on Saturday. So Trump actually isn't so original on this mineral deal, nor has he been yet successful. We're also hearing the Blinken idiot stepped up and said, oh, that Biden actually offered a mineral deal before as well. But Zelensky used whose technology, though, to attack Russia now? It's just an embarrassment. I don't know what Trump thinks he's doing. Trump made a promise, and Zelensky uses Trump's stuff in order to attack and violate Trump's word. Trump says nothing. Is what I'm telling you it was when I first looked at this whole thing. But this deal you can't refuse just had all the earmarks of the tales from an economic hitman. And then back to Tucker Carlson's assessment and how they start vilifying Zelensky. And I don't know, folks, about this mineral deal whatsoever when you see what's going on. The protection aside, you have to ask, is he that crazy? Is he really that crazy to turn that down? When we look at it from the tales of an economic hitman, maybe he's not. But what is the end result when someone did not agree with Uncle Sam in the past? Zelensky acted like a crazy person, Carlson says to the U.S. Treasury Secretary. The Ukrainian leader is reluctant to sign a resource deal with Washington, but forgets who's footing Kiev's bill, the American journalist has said. Now, I was real disappointed to read that from him. That's not telling the whole tale. Who's footing the bill was the guy who started the mess, which was the Maidan in 2014, the United States overthrow that allowed Zelensky in, the puppet. Pinocchio Linsky. Ukrainian leader Vladimir Zelensky acted like a crazy person during talks over a resource deal with the U.S., particularly given the country is still afloat in no small part due to Washington's assistance by U.S. plan. If Trump wanted to stop it, he's already said it. The United States is the weapons, the only thing to keep that place running. That's Trump's gift, I suppose, but it's not for nothing, is it? And it's not for the minerals either, is it? Carlson made, you think that Putin's not observing all this stupidity and nonsense? Carlson made the remarks while interviewing Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, who claimed that Zelensky had on three separate occasions derailed the highly anticipated agreement, which would grant the U.S. access to Ukraine's vast mineral resources. Now, crazy as Zelensky might be, would you agree to that extortionate deal? Is my biting thought here. Would you really agree to that? And then the other problem is, what is Ukraine? Russia hasn't stopped taking territory. What is going to be the size of Ukraine? Even Romania is looking to pluck some of it out. What natural resources? When do you determine that? So we got a lot of chickens being counted before they hatch, it seems to me. This is BTWRLM 623. And from the land of the greatest supporter of Ukraine to the point of threatening a nuclear winter, Starmer to announce the end of globalization. The UK PM will say that tariffs are wrong, but that he understands US President Trump's economic nationalism, according to the paper. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer will deliver a speech on Monday acknowledging the era of globalization has come to an end. Has globalism ended? Think very carefully on what they're doing here and what's going on. Staying in the UK, 12,000 Brits arrested per year over social media posts. I'm tying this into globalism. Is it gone away? And here are the two terms. One is kind of nested in another, but one is really an interesting definition when you find out what it's about. Is globalism dead? Globalization seems to be suffering, or maybe dead, but is globalism. And then we hear 12,000 Brits arrested per year over social media posts. Suspects were prosecuted under laws criminalizing offensive speech online. Thousands of people in UK have been detained and questioned by police over online posts deemed threatening or offensive. Can I add, against the core United States interests in the near future in America? According to figures published on Friday, officers make around 12,000 arrests annually under Section 127 of the Communications Act of 2003 and Section 1 of the Malicious Communications Act of 1988. Never heard of these before until right after 9/11, and now they go all the way back to 1988, set up all that time waiting. These laws criminalize causing distress by sending messages that are grossly offensive or by sharing content of an indecent, obscene, or menacing character via electronic communications networks. In 2023 alone, officers from 37 police forces made 12,183 arrests, around 33 per day. The Times said, they run out of people at some point, aren't they? But at any rate, the Times said that this marks a 58% increase from 2019, remember pre-COVID, when 7,734 arrests were recorded. So what's offensive? It depends on who makes that determination. It's in the receiver to tell you, right? And they win right there. Presumption of guilt because of an accusation. No different than the problem of the due process we're hearing of the deportees that shouldn't be deported. And now we can't get it back. At least yet. While some of the cases that were resolved through out-of-court settlements, the most commonly cited reason was the evidential difficulties, particularly when victims declined to proceed. So you can see here they need you to rat out your fellow man or woman. The statistics have sparked public outcry, with civil liberties groups accusing the authorities of over-policing the internet and undermining free speech through the use of vague communications laws. When are we going to get rid of this word free speech over there in the UK? I don't even get where you think you have that with this kind of setup. The Times highlighted the case of Maxie Allen and Rosalind Levine, who were arrested on January 29th after raising concerns in a private parents' WhatsApp group about the hiring process of their daughter's school. Six uniformed officers arrived at their home, detained them in front of their youngest child, and took them to the police station. The couple was questioned on suspicion of harassment, malicious communications, and causing a nuisance on school property after the school alleged that they had cast aspersions about the chair of governors. They were fingerprinted, searched, and locked in a cell for 8 hours. Quote, it was hard to shake off the sense that I was living in a police state, close quote, Allen told the Daily Mail, adding that the messages contained no offensive language or threat, but were simply a bit sarcastic. Now, I just mentioned social media from globalism. And we get into this story coming all in the same week. I got all these things just keep coming around just to remind us. The newsness is to remind us. China expands social credit system with 23 new directives to deepen surveillance and enforce political loyalty. What did I say earlier about the real ID? Digitize your face, and they expand. Aadhaar, all biometrics digitized. Now, China, 23 new directives to deepen surveillance and enforce political loyalty. Remember those loyalty cards you have for Safeway? You think those are different? See, you're already accustomed to it. You're not going to even know it's upon you. China's ruling party has introduced a fresh set of 23 directives aimed at scaling up its already sprawling social credit infrastructure, reinforcing a system that assigns behavioral scores to citizens and organizations in order to control access to basic services and opportunities. Following this, folks? Remember the pivot to China? I said it wasn't military. Well, it might be going military in a little bit after this financial tariff war. The pivot to China was this. Obama was telling us they're pivoting to China for the example of the digital gulag. For basic services and opportunities, published through the state-backed Zhen Hao news agency, the new measures are pitched as a strategy to address what the government describes as fragmented oversight and limited data sharing. But in practice, the overhaul amounts to a deeper entrenchment of surveillance, one that tightens scrutiny not only of individuals and corporations, but also of local governments and public institutions. The social credit system aggregates personal and institutional data to generate rankings that influence everything. Behavior deemed unacceptable by the Communist Party, such as engaging in religious activity, voicing dissent, UK, Mr. Khalil, your tats, or even minor infractions like jaywalking, can trigger punitive restrictions, as Beijing has steadily broadened the scope of the system over the years that began as a financial credibility tool has transformed into a mechanism for social conformity enforcement. You have a credit score in the United States by chance? Did Doge just go through Social Security to get to a third-party credit reporting agency? How long do I stay silent on that for y'all? Did you pick that one up? I hope you did. I hope you did. We're right there, folks. We're all right there. The newly unveiled framework aims to make data collection and dissemination more fluid between government departments, ostensibly in the name of efficiency. Doge, is that you? Don't you think this stuff is fascinating, folks? I get kind of excited to see it all pulled together. What a terror. And moving from what Britain should be doing, arresting genocide, from the poor in wealth, rich in principle determination department, Houthis essentially eliminated U.S. carrier group from Asia without having to fire a shot, so says the report. If you don't think we've got an interesting new military problem in the world that the United States may not be able to meet, and no one understands and no one really quite knows who has what, even though the United States, Trump just came out and said, we got things that no one else does. Well, we don't know what the other guy's got. But anyway, with this story, with the redeployment of the USS Carl Vinson aircraft carrier from Asia to the Middle East, Yemen's Houthis fighters are tying up two U.S. carrier strike groups, undermining America's plans against China in the Indo-Pacific, U.S. Defense News and Analyst site 1945 has grumbled. And this, don't know anything about this before. I've never heard of this group. This is a new group to me, and I haven't heard anywhere ever before, so I'm going to take a little bit of observation on this. 1945 has been coming up more and more in the news, so I'm going to be a little concerned over what is really being fed to us through it. But we're going to get some stories, some information here. We can see the proof of what's on the water, so to speak, with this, and see that this the logic works out. Whether or not the outcome works out is not our point at this point. It's just that we see a action and reaction going on from the poorest country in the world, almost, standing up on a principle, wanting to stop the genocide of the Palestinian people in Palestine from Israel. And that's what they're doing. It's not anti-Semitic. See, that's the whole point. But the United States government would say so. It's against the United States' interest for that to happen. Quote, they have essentially eliminated the Carl Vinson from East Asia without having to fire a shot, 1945 pointed out, warning that this is severely undermines the U.S. strategy for Taiwan and benefits China. And that might be the op here, the psyop here, relative to the news that's being spread around relative to China, making it sound like something else is going on or whatever. But for our information, I found this fascinating. Well, a little bit of pipsqueak of a country, what can do, kind of thought about us, we, the people, what little bit we can do may have grand effects or partial effects that help slow things up, change the course of certain options that are going on. The deployment also means that the Navy has actually pondered the unthinkable, that the Truman or the Vinson could be hit by a Houthi missile, the outlet warned. Quote, in the Middle East, an open-ended shooting war with the Houthis would be disastrous. It is limited in scope, but a carrier hit would raise the stakes to Vietnam War or even World War II like combat posture, the site predicted. And I understand Iran has even better missiles, as I've been looking through finding more information on them. I'm not sure what they'll end up doing, but they are more capable. This got to be thinking, if the Houthi can stand off the United States Navy for fear it could lose an aircraft carrier, what does the United States think the much more capable Iran could do? I mean, what are they doing in their repositioning and then threatening Iran because they help someone stopping genocide? What mentality drives all this is just, I can't quite follow it. And which additional thought here then is that Satan Yehu has gotten old peacemaker Nickier to start World War III to have your sons and daughters fight and die for Satan Yehu and the mass murdering band of illegally belligerent occupying Zionist political movement posing as the state of Israel. Just as I suggested was likely to occur when that assassination attempt, so-called, went on. You know, that's still a question in my mind. You notice how that all died. Not him. The issue. And yet you see him turn, and he changed completely from what his campaign rhetoric was into this. That now the Houthi become important, and the United States Navy needs to start considering seriously what the Houthi can do when we realize that Iran can do worse. As the Zionista Federation political movement moves through a continuing here massacre, Israeli troops killed 15 Palestinian medics and buried them in a mass grave. I just have to say, these stories are just beyond me. I don't even understand them. I understand what they're saying. How do people do this to each other? What is the makeup of someone that will kill somebody else like this? Someone trying to help other people. And then you murder them, massacre them, bury them in an unmarked grave, and keep people out for a while. And it still gets out, which is the other interesting thing. Palestinians held funerals one day on 15 medics and emergency responders killed by Israeli troops in southern Gaza after their bodies in mangled ambulances were found buried in an impromptu mass grave apparently plowed over by Israeli military bulldozers, this most moral army. The Palestinian Red Crescent says the slain workers and their vehicles were clearly marked as medical and humanitarian personnel and accused Israeli troops of killing them in cold blood. The Israeli military says its troops opened fire on vehicles that approached them suspiciously without identification. The dead included 8 Red Crescent workers, 6 members of Gaza's Civil Defense Emergency Unit, and staffer from UNRW, the UN's Agency for Palestinians. The International Red Cross Red Crescent said it was the deadliest attack on its personnel in 8 years. Trump is such a peacemaker allowing this slaughter and should get the Nobel Peace Prize for this, right, Satan Yehu? Now, let's go back to that little denial. Israelis said their troops opened fire on suspiciously moving vehicles without identification. The video came out. A video that someone was filming that was going in, one of the medics, was gotten after buried, it was found, clearly shows them going in with lights, clearly shows them going to a place to help people, clearly shows them in an organized procession, and then they're attacked. Sound and everything. Maybe you can track that down. Get that in your eyes. Get that in your ears. Israel will lie if we didn't have other proof. Or as it was posted by Asal Rod, and read this headline if you want to know the total impunity of the genocidal state looks like. There should be a wall-to-wall coverage and global condemnations for this horror story. The Israeli troops killed 15 Palestinian medics and buried them in a mass grave. Yes, there should be, but more than in words only. I would ask you to get the ex-Twitter link here from the blogcaster or where you find the syndication links, the link tree that Sound Minds puts together. See the vid yourself. Yeah, it's not a pretty sight. Not nice to hear. Or if you think what the UN says is faulty, look at the video at the link And it's worse than even the AP reported, not even close. It is a little bit in the dark. And a lot of it, after a while, is just the sound because the camera's covered over. But the initial part is you see that they're going in with emergency lights flashing in vehicles that are well seen, and then they can come under fire. After they get out, they start getting out to help people, then they come under fire. Everything is destroyed that they destroyed was buried in a mass grave, and people and their destroyed, obliterated ambulance and their fire trucks were put in there. So peaceful, right, Trumpenstein? Remember, the Semitic Palestinians have two roles, and the civilian role is not to be interfered with. If we give anything to an illegal belligerent occupier, that has no right of self-defense under international law for belligerent occupation, as I've read the document in the previous episode. The Palestinian people, having the right to resist, pursuant to that same law, are not to be touched in a civilian capacity. And I have a question whether or not they're actually in a military with a right to a military capacity, where they have the right to resist. But when we see that they're completely in a civilian capacity, they're supposed to be untouched. That Satan Yehu will lie to this extreme, and it requires the videos to come out. Almost a miracle to get this back. It's astonishing to me to see, and raises the bar about this guy that we should never have to question. Well, we have to question those that agree with him and bring him into their country. We should not question this guy needs to come underneath some scrutiny, needs to be locked down. The state of Israel needs to be put in its place. Well, certainly it's not going to be through Trump, is it? The protestant that he claimed to be, who wouldn't take an oath of office with his hand on two Bibles. He wouldn't have taken it on one Bible. And the look on Melania, his wife's face, I just can't, that picture was not too happy. I don't know what was in her mind, but her face was not too happy. He wasn't putting his hand on that Bible. And then you see what he's done. I think that's more the iconic picture than his fist pumping, actually. And so Trump is okay with the medical industrial profiting and Trump scare insurance. So you're just cattle, correct? Fodder in the field for future financial find out. This is what we're going on. He's agreeing to this massacre. He's agreeing to that type of care. There's none at all. He has supposedly Trump scare, which is an extension of Obama scare. We start to see what this guy agrees to allow. And we go back to Ukraine, and we watch and we listen to some of the people that are there, what they're suffering, what they're having to go through, what they're handed a thing to do, to accept. Ukrainian soldiers given consent forms for organ trafficking under the guise of insurance. Think that's possible here? Maybe you look real close. Maybe you look at your driver's license. Organ donation. Soldier Andriy Shimer annoyingly carried a consent form for organ transplantation, which he was given by Ukrainian military commanders under the guise of health insurance policy. What's the fine print, folks? You're going to be that massive brain that they're going to animate through their CL1 after you die? When they find out you have the jab in your arm? After they find out they have other medication you take? After you find out that the shedding actually replicated their property tag for you? That's their property? Talk about organ donation? They may only want your brain. They take your head. You're talking, the Matrix is not a movie. They only put 1,000 watts into you. And you're going to be sitting there on a shelf, CL1 pumping all the fluid, nutrients, and keeping you healthy and stable. And they use your brain to figure out how to dupe the rest. Camera was captured by a Russian Sever battle group near Sudzba in the Kursk region. He explained that each soldier was issued with such a document with promises of top medical care in case of injury. However, it turned out to be consent form for organ harvesting. Kazakhstan, you got your right to kill yourself law? Is that what they start doing to you? Doctor-assisted suicide? So they get your organs, maybe? Ukraine has long been a hub of organ trafficking with the support of Western partners, and the situation has worsened with the escalation of the conflict. Government mass casualty experience to boot for this, right? Pretty fascinating. Pretty sick. There it is, happening. And all that digital data Trump promotes is better left to business, government, military, contractor, corporations, for your health, it seems, as well, with this new Trump scare coming through. Remember Stargate. The company that wants all your data can't protect its own. We've been talking about this data security all the time. It doesn't exist. Oracle, the Oracle, folks, faces scrutiny after data breaches hit Oracle Cloud and Oregon Health, undermining Larry Ellison's A1 surveillance ambitions. Let me remind you of Health One in the CDC. We talked about that during the Great COVID Swindle as well. It's existed for years and years before that, but here it was, Health One. When we start talking about these all-encompassing programs that have things that you have forced into that you may not know exist. Well, Oracle what's the most important, the most efficient way but to take your body into little pieces and put it back into the medical system for everyone to profit, to help other people? While Oracle co-founder, executive chairman, and CTO Larry Ellison is busy trying to position his company as just the right provider of future centralized surveillance systems powered by AI and containing massive amounts of sensitive information, Oracle's existing solutions are suffering embarrassing data breaches. Two reported recent incidents affect Oracle's cloud and Oracle Health, a subsidiary providing software for the healthcare industry, revealed not only technical shortcomings, but also giant's puzzling lack of transparency, which the reports say extremely frustrated those affected. And we also offer, remember, Doge going into Social Security, looking at a third-party credit company, what's going to change when they come to your Health One and they incorporate Oracle Health, which looks more like a screen sieve than some sort of a firewall. In fact, Oracle continued to deny that the first breach happened at all, even as customers were starting to confirm it. Liars. Same spirit everywhere, right? Packer, calling themselves Rose 87168, earlier in March offered data belonging to 6 million Oracle Cloud customers, only for Oracle to tell Bleeping Computer, quote, "There has been no breach at Oracle Cloud. The published credentials are not for the Oracle Cloud. No Oracle Cloud customers experienced a breach or lost any data." Again, that must be certainly from the lawyers, the attorneys. Deny, and never admit. That's why Trump's attorney that admitted got fired, if you think Trump's telling you the truth. The company attempting to wordsmith statements is how cybersecurity expert Kevin Beaumont reacted to this. Quote, "Oracle is attempting to wordsmith statements around Oracle Cloud and use very specific words to avoid responsibility. This is not okay," Beaumont wrote in a blog post, noting that the platform that has highly likely been affected is managed by Oracle. A threat actor named Andrew is behind the second incident, which has left a number of healthcare organizations and hospitals in the U.S. exposed to attempts to extort millions in cryptocurrency from them in exchange for not leaking or selling the stolen patient data. Once again, when the news about the privacy nightmare broke, Oracle started to look like something of a nightmare itself for its customers, refusing to formally admit there was a breach and then going to considerable lengths to try and disassociate itself from the event. Oh, no, we didn't kill those medics. Oh, we didn't do anything to their equipment. No, we didn't bury them. No, they're all fine. They're all helping people. They're saving Palestinians. Open-air prison over there, folks, is your open-air prison here. It's going to go to the digital gulag. How's your customer service going to be then? This includes communicating with affected organizations without using company's letterhead and even, according to the reports, instructing them to communicate with Oracle Health Security Officer only by phone and not email. Oracle did not respond to TechCrunch's request for comment when asked about the two incidents. Merely a month prior, Larry Ellison was presenting in a case for allowing Oracle to be the one to centralize pretty much all the data available in the United States, including DNA. Another of his distinctly dystopian ideas is to keep citizens on their best behavior via a constant AI-powered surveillance system. China, is that you? Open says me? Yeah, Stargate. Right, Trump? And unironically, this is deemed government efficiency. We hear RFK Jr., we fired some people by mistake. HHS director suggests 20% of those let go will be reinstated. So efficient, folks. Oh, no, we deported you by mistake, but we can't get you back. Sound familiar, folks? Is this the future that you want? Some of the thousands of federal health workers abruptly fired this week will be reinstated, says their boss, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. The Secretary of Health and Human Services told reporters that the chaotic back and forth is a necessary part of the process being undertaken by Elon Musk's Department of Governmental Efficiency. Is it, folks? Due process would have slowed that down, don't you think? I've been also arguing, yeah, I'd like to see a downsized government, but the one we have has gotten in a place. You're dealing with people's lives, they're fellow Americans, and we have to have an orderly progression of them out, and it has to be justifiable. The grants and obligations that are out there have to be fulfilled. You just can't cut them loose. And that's why you saw that the DOGE was only supposed to be advisory, but they're actually been given a knife to cut and hack and hew. And now we're finding out it's not so efficient, right, Muskrat? Part of DOGE's, we talked about this from the beginning, is we're going to do 80% cuts, but 20% of those are going to have to be reinstated because, well, we all make mistakes, kiddies. That's your government, folks. Even without Musk, how's that? By mistake, part of the hallmark, I think, of the Trump administration, the worst violating, as in depriving people of due process, that's supposed to make America great again, right? China imposes extra 84% tariff on U.S. goods, and I'm going to have to interject, when I pulled this content together, these things are going so fast, the percentages are going to be off, just adjust them up. This is pretty interesting. The stupidity going on around all this, and again, it's like Trump is a bull in a China shop here in what's going on, and we're going to look underneath the skin a little bit. China imposes 84%. It's now up to, I think, 124%, and Trump just raised it to 145% as they start tit-for-tatting, and we'll see what happens on all that. There's other things going on underneath. The move comes after President Trump slapped a total tariff of 104% in Chinese imports. China, remember, this is all about trade deficit, trade imbalances, and Trump is going in without any prior negotiations and forcing everybody to negotiate, and he never asked for it. This is my problem with all this, that I don't think any of this was necessary, but we're going to read now the financial war. We're talking about World War II. This is not China war. The pivot to the war against China is going to be financial first. In that regard, he may not be such a bad general, but I don't think it's going to work quite like that. We'll see. Again, it's not about the fact that there shouldn't be tariffs. It's what the reasoning is. Could he done it better? Could he just had a little bit of forethought? Could he been respectful? But if he's not going to be respectful to them, he's not going to be respectful to you. And I already got the evidence that he's not respecting maybe our last right, which is due process. And so I've got heavy criticism now where I was hoping that Trump might turn a corner. It's almost all dashed at this point. And he could still change it. He could turn it around, I guess. But he hasn't. China has raised its tariffs on American goods to a total of 84%. The finance ministry has announced the measure was introduced after the United States President Donald Trump increased tariffs to 104%. A whopping 104%. Now, again, these tariffs numbers are oddball. They could be a whole lot more. What it ends up being is a problem with trade. You don't want any trade. And that's another type of issue going on, another type of war. Beijing has slapped an additional 50% tariff duty to take effect at noon Thursday on American goods, mirroring Washington's move. The whole thing behind the Trump issue, though, is that he wants them actually to go negative. He wants to zero. But what he wants more is a negotiation. So I don't understand why he just doesn't negotiate. And when they don't want to negotiate, then he can incrementally raise tariffs. But no, he's a bull in a China shop here, and he causes world chaos in the markets. In a way, I guess shaking stuff out, you can think that's good, but in a way, also not. It's not good at all. And it causes some really big, serious questions, and I'll maybe get to those here real soon. The U.S. practice of escalating tariffs on China is a mistake on top of a mistake which seriously infringes China's legitimate rights and interests and seriously damages the rules-based multilateral trading system, the document reads. In addition to the tariffs hike, China's Ministry of Commerce filed a complaint with the World Trade Organization against the U.S. and placed six American companies on the unreliable entity list. An additional 12 U.S. businesses were subjected to export controls that bar Chinese companies from supplying them with dual-use items. See, it's not just in the bioweapon jab industry. It's also in lots of other companies. There's dual use. And the people pay attention to that, that know what's going on. In a statement on, well, what's that dual use? Civilian and military. Simple. In a statement on Tuesday, the ministry vowed that China would fight the trade war to the end. It's in quotes, to the end. And firmly defend its interests. Oh, China has interests too. And here we get to the mutual respect. When we have our interests, they have theirs. Why don't we have respect for theirs enough to just offer them an opportunity? But they're going to fight to the end. Where have we heard that before? As another term made by Russia, the existential threat. I just want to place that importance right here. As I read in a separate statement on Wednesday, the Tariff Commission of the State Council urged the U.S. to immediately correct its wrong practices, cancel all unilateral tariff measures against China, and properly resolve differences with China through equal dialogue on the basis of mutual respect. In March, Trump imposed a 20% tariff on China's imports. Last week, he added an additional 34, bringing the total to 54. Beijing responded in kind, introducing 34% tariffs on U.S. goods, after which Trump added another 50%, bringing the total to 104. And they've upped it again to 145. It may go up even higher. Beijing earlier condemned the escalatory trade war as a form of blackmail and economic bullying. Trump's decision to impose sweeping tariffs on China and other nations has sent shockwaves across stock markets in the U.S. and further afield, wiping out $10 trillion worth of value. $10 trillion worth of value. While acknowledging the adverse effects of his policy, the president defended his approach, citing the need to address trade abuses and bolster domestic manufacturing. Listen to that last little bit. That's my question about this whole thing. So I'm not quite sure where he thinks he's going relative to a number of other pieces that need to be put in place for tariffs to work. The manufacturing base is the important one, or removing those income taxes, which Trump can't control, or having the population using sound money indicates that there's no forethought here with Trump, no cohesive plan, but loads of hopium. Just like the Founding Fathers writing the Constitution for the United States of America. No forethought, right? No. So clearly Trump is not making the forefathers America great again. And Trump doesn't use the methodology required to create the document Trump took his oath to uphold either. Trump does not seem to have any forethought on the consequences to people, hoping nobody can resist his bullying. Trump cares about people in such a way that he's willing to commit or doesn't stop the commission of genocide, attacks people trying to stop genocide while claiming America first but making it Israel firster. That certainly makes America great again, right? No, what a disgrace. There's a whole other way to work that he could be just as formidable by going a different way. But he doesn't respect people. It's okay. Oh, we just make mistakes. You're talking about people's lives. But see, your job doesn't mean much if he's willing to go kill a bunch of people, move them out of the way to make a resort, casino, and water theme park. And we get a bit more clarity through ex-Twitter posts from Donald Trump Jr. responding to someone explaining the deficit, trying to show how tariffs are needed, saying no Chinese can buy American products because of trade restrictions in China. Now, how these tariffs are going to make more stuff go into China, I don't have a clue. So they can buy it, I don't even know. And reverse, how are we going to be able to afford that stuff in the United States? And then there's some relief, except to China, shows there's a different motive here. Where in the ex-Twitter, John E. Thorne says, does everyone understand that China has a massive trade surplus and its supply is inelastic? Keep it simple. China's hand is not as strong as many on Wall Street and MSM are suggesting. Ever wonder why Wall Street is a big China cheerleader? And then Trump Jr. replies, try buying an American product in China, virtually non-existent because they made it impossible. And because it had never occurred to me until I saw it explained that way, because Trump based tariff rates on gross trade imbalance, I replied, so what you're saying is I have to pay 104%, and now it's 145% more in America because someone in China isn't buying an American product, or I have to buy that unaffordable America product. Why don't you just make sound money great again? And I hadn't really thought about it that way. Because someone over in China don't want to buy it or can't buy it. We have to buy it. And we're going to pay a ton of money for it now. And I noticed something else. That somebody was making a comment, $23 or $26 million in beef comes from Australia to the United States and there's no return sales. Well, maybe they don't want our GMO stuff. Maybe they don't want the antibiotic-infested stuff. Maybe they just don't want our stuff because it's just not quality anymore. There's all that together. How are you going to force China to accept stuff? Russia, you're going to force Russia to take our GMO soybeans when their law says we don't do that? That we don't make that? So there's a whole lot more behind this. But why don't we just go to sound money? For the people, we don't have to worry about it. When we stop forcing people in other countries to buy our stuff, and when they don't, then we force the Americans to do it. The price of it, let's say a thermocouple just went out. Last time I had to buy one, it was like $15. To buy it now, we're already living in these tariff war that's happened 2 years back. That thermocouple is now $75 plus shipping from an American company because I can't get it from the Chinese company or whoever it was making. I didn't even look who made it. I saw no actual difference. And so this is another game going on underneath the skin of it all. And I'm a little bit perturbed because I've been telling you for a long time and forever I can say it, back in the 70s or 80s, actually, the 80s is when it started to move. We offshored most of our manufacturing off. And anybody who lived there were working then after the recession of the 70s, which I think we're going back into, is serious, serious problem. We're looking around saying, why are you offshoring all of our jobs? Is what's maybe happening again if we don't get the manufacturing set back up. Will the corporations do it? I'm not so sure. They might. Will we be able to come in time? Maybe. We'll see. Are we going to solve Trump's problem? Could happen. We are Americans that way. We've shown we can do that. We're going to be living through the consequences of using a fiat in this global reset to parity that Trump continues after starting it with the great COVID swindle. And one question in mitigation is whether that U.S. manufacturing can come back quickly and priced competitively enough, is whether Congress will eliminate those income taxes or whether sound money begins to be used by people again. That's our choice as well. We have a little bit of this too. These and quite a few other factors will determine how bad we the people will suffer as our standard of living begins to match those in the rest of the world. Parity here is what this is about, it seems to me. It keeps focusing through that. It keeps bringing that up as I look through all this. As the U.S. dollar world reserve currency manipulated the world into the austerity that caused the Chinese people to jump out of the buildings to kill themselves as they became the producers for nothing. Remember those stories? Can we the people rise up to do this different? Trump is hoping you can to make Trump look great again. But back to the tariffs, fiscal responsibility by Congress is a necessity as well. The fiscal responsibility that Trump relies on is not in his hands to decide. And Trump says that these tariffs bring in $2 billion per day. That doesn't add up enough to cover the new $1 trillion bill that he is advocating and promoting to go to war. He says it's coming through in the next week. The $1 trillion package to war, the budget the peace taker is agreeing to. $2 billion doesn't cover that. So instead of the global gloating and chest thumping Trump is doing for all the trouble he's causing, he would save more money not funding the war machine to the tune of $1 trillion. And the peacemaker he claims to be, then feeding his ego, threatening the countries of the world with tariffs instead of seeking the trade balances with measured tariffs as time goes on, for just cause, not just cause. But ever-present warmongering is all peacemakers' intentions, isn't it? Right? How much more nonsense are people going to believe and put up with here with this? And this is essentially an economic sanctions war against China to weaken China. So Russia Iran, and China is RIC, the first of the BRICS. The administration so much admitted that this war by sanctions through tariffs, when the White House explained that the existing sanctions on Russia already, quote, preclude any meaningful trade, rendering additional tariffs unnecessary. So Trump can claim China's tariffs are unjustified back to us, but China has the same duty to protect itself as it deems fit too. So does Trump want tariffs or trades? Or a refrigerator star? Warring against all the countries starts to make the United States look desperate, not great. Terrific, but not terrific. And with high enough tariffs, there will be no trade with China, just like with the sanctions against Russia have caused. But none dare call all economic blockade by sanctions or tariffs an illegal wartime embargo. Well, no one besides the guy behind the woodshed, it seems. Now against China, this embargo coming. But China will look elsewhere, just as Russia did. It's a slightly different world than when the tariffs of the past were built on us, both on the manufacturing domestically and what the world looks like and what it's starting to do. And they've been planning for 2 decades now, earnestly, about how to avoid this. And these targeted tariffs are particular against China now, work not unlike the directed sanctions placed on Russia that is making Russia great again. And you all heard it, the attitude that Trump says recently. He said, Trump brags, countries are calling us up, kiss my ass, over tariffs. I'm telling you, quote, I'm telling you, these countries are calling us up, kissing my ass, Trump told the National Republican Congressional Committee dinner late Tuesday, just hours before the tariffs went into effect. Quote, they are dying to make a deal. Please, please, sir, make a deal. I'll do anything, sir, he said mockingly. So that was just some East Coast moxie. Why is Trump promoting digital currency and not sound money? Or AI and not organic intelligence? Or corporate Stargate going to an Oracle, Neo, and trying to run end around the law, denying people fundamental rights, as if you're already property without any rights, and presumptively that you like it. Right, Klaus Schwab and Fink at BlackRock? Where are the fundamentals to make America great again, and more than the fundamental overthrow of these things by Trump as people watch, accept, and pay for? Remember that theme through these times that we are paying for, as I've been telling you. People are starting to recognize that it's soon to become very costly to us. And I'm not talking only about money, because as Gerald Celente says, when all else fails, they take you to war. So cue Yemen and Iran on top of the lingering Ukraine, right, peacemaker? Can you believe this guy? More audacious than Obama? 3 wars and a shiny new $1 trillion go-to-war budget to grab for the brass peace ring from Nobel. That's not what the peace president campaigned on, is it? And that's the worth of Donald kissing my big bottom Trump pledge is to us. There are other things as important while getting things done, right? Might be more than crass, gloating insults sounding like he's on some celebrity roast reality game show. If he had the advantage he claims, he wouldn't need to do anything other than be gracious. But there is no grace in the genocidal sociopath class. And for all the opulence or culture he surrounds himself with, he appears last class and disrespectful representing America. Someone calling him to stop the surprise harm that trade imbalances cause, if that is his real goal, and which cannot be fixed overnight or as fast as the tariffs would implement, then to characterize their communication as kissing his big fat bottom is not a negotiator either. It's at least being an arrogant bully. And maybe someone doesn't want Trump's chlorinated or ammoniated beef or GMO mutated food. Maybe they just don't want to eat that stuff. But on the other hand, a bully is only stopped when his victim punches the bully in the nose, which would certainly not be characterized as kissing my big fat behind. No, not the guy behind the woodshed. Trump's behind. And you don't have to be the big dog to stop a bully. Just the one with enough spirit. Right, Yemen? And this needless arrogance is not making America great either. Trump's representations are more despicable when you see he could have done right rightly. Why does old Nick Ear, the peacemaker, do that if newly inspired by God? And this trade war against China is all but proven as Trump just reduced all the tariffs to 10% for 90 days, except China, because China was disrespectful and didn't kiss Trump's big fat behind. Trump pauses reciprocal tariffs for 90 days on every nation except China. President Trump finds an off-ramp for non-retaliating countries. The president wrote in his True Social account, "Based on the lack of respect that China has shown to the world markets, I am hereby raising tariff charge to China by the United States of America to 125% effective immediately." As I said, it's gone to 145, maybe up from there. "At some point, hopefully in the near future, China will realize the days of ripping off the United States and other countries is no longer sustainable, or acceptable. Conversely, and based on the fact that more than 75 countries have representatives of the United States, including the Departments of Commerce and Treasury and the USTR, to negotiate a solution to the subjects being discussed relative to the trade barriers and tariffs, currency manipulation, and non-monetary tariffs, and that these countries have not, at my strong suggestion, retaliated in any way in shape or form against the United States, I have authorized a 90-day pause and a substantially lowered reciprocal tariff during this period and 10% also effectively immediately. Thank you for your attention to this matter." Let me remind you, China's complaint was to, I think, with the World Trade Organization, that trade organization said the United States had done the same thing beforehand. So they have their own, objection to all this, and Trump didn't, the United States didn't follow that as well. But you look, there's no forethought. The markets lost it. And that didn't have to happen. And didn't, as some people cheerlead, expose any enemy countries. Dropping the tariff to 10% doesn't balance the trade either. It was also said that the markets completely reversed their fall. Some saying over $5 trillion was added to the market. But added? Really? Did it come out of thin air? And what about, what came back? Was it the same people that lost trillions the day before? Remember, it was 10 trillions that was lost. However, there was that big jump. Now we've had a big jump. Gold went right back up. It jumped above what it was before, but not so much stocks and everything else. So the safe haven rule is on, going into gold. But what was that transfer of wealth that went on? And did you just witness another shift of massive wealth in the art of the steal by insiders? So with Trump's tariff moratorium, you have 90 days to stock up on any supplies you source from countries other than China before the tariffs may be reapplied, raising your cost of living. For now, as I said, I've got to look at tariffs have already been engaged. The thermocouple I could buy may $15, $17. I'm looking at $75+. But it's American made, don't you know? Apparently, no one is in China wanting it. But I fooled Trump. I can't afford that, and I'll just have to learn how to bake on the top of the stove. So the American company can go pound sand because it couldn't compete affordably. That'll make America great again, by gum. This has been BTWRLM 623. I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs or nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned.
beating drums. Hal's voice a beacon, fierce and bold in the fight for truth. Call behind the woodshed standing.